Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams. Joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. Good morning, man.
Now it feels like we are talking at 1.5 speed.
Remember? Oh, are we? Oh, yeah. Last week you were talking fast and I was talking normally.
Yeah. And now this time you're talking a little fast and I'm talking normally, which maybe means we're the same speed then.
I think it's just all the life I'm hearing outside is just giving me energy.
There's so much.
I can hear birds through the window and the window's not even open. They're all just living and excited and it's awesome.
It is awesome. It's spring is what it is.
Yep.
And if I hear one more person here tell me this is the worst spring ever or this isn't spring, I'm like, do you not know what spring is? Spring, the definition of spring, like if you wrote a book about spring, it would be rainy and alternating rainy, sunny, cooler, warmer. It's the transition. And it cracks me up when people talk about like, well, this isn't spring. Well, then what is it? Because if you had 50s, upper 50s in January, you'd be out of your mind. So it's not winter.
Yep. It's all context, right?
It's all context
and expectation setting.
Every time I get caught off guard by people saying like, well, this isn't spring. Like, well, then what season, what would you define it as then? You have to then put it in something else because it's not 80s. Yeah, I know it's not summer yet, but it's not winter. It's like flowers are blooming, birds are out. We've had some really incredibly gorgeous days.
Yeah, yesterday, so we're speaking on Tuesday. Monday was shockingly beautiful, and I didn't think it would because it was all rainy and cloudy. It was such a delight. We had a soccer game down in like near Green Bay, west of Green Bay. That's the thing that right now, and I'm sure it's like this every year, and I'm just attuned to it because I had to be down there more with soccer. It was like we left here, it was like upper 60s, which was pleasant. We got there, it was sunny in like lower 80s. So the temperature difference was significant. The kids were kind of like, they're not used to it, right? So they're kind of melting in it. I'm like, well, it's going to be warmer this summer when you play soccer. But right now, that was shocking. But it was so fun just to be out in the sun.
And it is. It's so beautiful. Now, I could do without the mosquitoes coming out this early.
Are they out? I haven't had any issues with them yet.
Yeah, I got a mosquito bite on my finger.
Yeah.
Those are like, they like are, right on the knuckles. It's like they know it. And then we got our first like trying to fall asleep and then you hear the bzzz.
Oh yeah.
Like, oh no. Uh-huh. So welcome. Welcome. They're here. Anyway, speaking of welcoming or not, or mosquitoes.
Smooth as ever.
Bugging people.
So smooth.
We finished up our series and I got a little nervous in it. So I don't know.
Oh yeah?
Well, yeah. Because I definitely wanted it. You said something to me afterwards. I was like, oh, good. If that's the way it came off. Do you remember what you said to me?
I don't remember exactly. No.
Great.
Do you?
I was hoping you. Yeah, well, kind of. You said it came off as an invitation and like this is why this is so great.
Oh, yeah. So I remember now. Thank you. So yeah. I felt like what I was left with was the life Jesus is offering us is so valuable. And it's like, what a joy to get to do this together. That's kind of what I felt like. This is something I really want. And I like how you cast that vision for it. And I could tell because, and I know you too, and I know behind the scenes, so I have an advantage, you know, over other people listening. But I do think like at the beginning of the sermon, I could tell that you wanted to make sure that everyone knew this is not a message that is meant to shame or to condemn or to whatever. It is quite the opposite. It's like emphasizing the invitation and then calling out, highlighting what is really at stake, you know? And I think it's like, what do we want? What do we want? And I think it's so rare that we get to sit down and just ask that question of ourselves. You know, we're on autopilot fulfilling what we want all the time, but often we don't slow down. It's interesting. The other day I was listening to a podcast and it's one of these ones where they read scripture and it's beautiful. They read scripture and then they give you time to think about it and they'll ask like two or three questions and then there's ambient music between the questions. And it was beautiful. And one of the questions they asked was just, what in your life brings you joy? And I was like, in contrast to the things that kind of feel like they should bring you joy, but they don't, it was such a good 2 minutes for me of just slowing down and thinking, what in my life lately does bring me joy? It just makes me realize like, having Sunday mornings like that, where we're thinking about our heart's desires, is so valuable because typically people aren't going to ask us that in conversation. It might be weird to do that. Like, what do you really want right now? Mm-hmm. You get there, right? But we need to think about it because that's what's running us.
Yeah, it is. That's what drives us, is our desires. And one of the, you know, the enemy has a lot of tools that he can use. And one of them is to distract us from even thinking about what do we want. I mean, think about going to a restaurant. I mean, that's one of the few places that somebody says, well, what do you want?
Good point.
Like, you can have anything on the menu. Like, the server doesn't, the server's happy to get you whatever you want. And so you have to actually think about it. And people struggle. That might have been an interesting illustration. Like, how often do we struggle? And then how often do we say, oh, like, well, if I go last, you know, like, everybody else can order, I'll go last. Because I think actually stating and making a decision about, I want this thing, so I have to commit to this thing, is difficult. We want a lot of things in theory. Like, I don't know anybody who doesn't want to be in better shape or doesn't want to, if you think about the Christian world, like, doesn't want to have a better prayer life or doesn't want to know the Bible more or doesn't want to have better community. But then we don't always align, like, we don't give it enough thought to actually reorient our lives around it. And I probably, if I had it to do over again, I probably would lean more into that idea of saying, like, I think I mentioned it before, but John Mark Comer, in his book Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, which I think is a great book, there's an illustration in there that just grabbed me, and it just hit me so hard, and it still resonates with me, which is, he talked about how he wanted to run a marathon, and he talks about, like, getting the gear and like, creating the plan and everything, and even, like, picking the race or whatever, and then struggling to do it and realizing, kind of having this aha moment, that he didn't want to run a marathon. He wanted to be a person who had run a marathon. And that subtle difference, and I thought in my life, how many times I want to be the person who's already done that. Like, think about a foreign language. For years, I've been thinking, like, I need to learn Spanish. I took French in high school. I thought it was a waste of time. We actually have an exchange student who on our soccer team. Mm-hmm. So that's been
that.
Fun.
That's awesome.
That's been fun. But, and by the way, she says my French is flawless.
I bet she does.
If she listens, yeah, she doesn't listen to the podcast.
I'll have to meet her and ask.
No, she would not say that. But what I realize is I don't want to be a person who learns Spanish. I want to be a person who already knows Spanish. People don't want to, like, there's so many things in life that we want, but we don't want it in a way that we're actually going to reorient our lives around it to get it. And if I could go back, that's probably what I would use more to illustrate the difference between, I can't imagine on a Sunday morning saying, like, hey, does anybody, we're gonna plan on growing in our faith together. Does anybody not want that? Like, nobody's gonna be like, oh yeah, it sounds great. Okay, but I did talk about the reorientation, but I kind of wish I'd connected those dots with that illustration a little bit more of, like, hey, confront yourself, ask yourself the hard question of, is this, I want this, kind of like, yeah, I'd like to learn a different language or something like that. Or is this like, I want this and that I'm going to reorient my life around this?
Yeah, that's interesting how one is like you wanting the result,
right,
of a certain kind of life. And it's true. I mean, I have feel the same way about Spanish, by the way. I would love to learn it. I have downloaded apps multiple times. I have set up the plan and gone for a day, you know, like it. And it's just, that's the, I mean, part of it is the intention muscle in me. It's like, do I really want that actually? Because the things I really do want, I will do. And I think that's such an important part of what you were saying on Sunday. That is how God designed us. We actually do the things we want to do all the time, even when it feels like we don't want to do them.
Right.
Because that's what we ultimately do want.
Which is why community is so important. Because what community does, every study show, again, this is another thing I could have brought up. Why didn't I? We should have done the podcast before. We should start doing that.
the pre-podcast
after I've written it, and like I, you know, and then be like, oh, I should say this instead. Well, then the sermon would be a lot longer. But I,
oh no,
I know,
oh no,
I know. But I think like the communal part of it is every study shows that community help. If you want to develop a habit, community is what matters. If you want to get in shape with a group of people. It's why CrossFit is so popular and why it is so effective, because of the communal side. It's not the exercise techniques. It's the community side of it. And that's the one thing that as we've done different things, imagine like, I mean, just what we did in January with the Dwell Bible app and the listening and some of those habits, people had some really cool stories about what God did through that. But my guess is most people have kind of petered out on that. I haven't looked at the numbers recently. But if you're together in community, you have a much higher chance of continuing on and in with things that you say you want. And part of the reason is because in community, you're reminded, oh yeah, I really want this. Oh yeah. On the days that you forget, someone else is there to remind you that no, this is what you want and this is what I want. And then on days when someone else forgets, you're in a place where you're like, no, yeah, we do want this together. That's just so critical in this whole piece, in this whole thing. And that's the part that we're trying to move people towards with the greenhouses and the classes and everything, is saying, okay, but if we're gonna do this and we're gonna persevere and we're gonna last, it has to be a communal effort. There has to be a culture and an identity that just says, like, this is who we are and this is what we're doing, this is what we're pursuing. This is how we pursue Christ together. And be okay with the fact that, well, it's not going to be for everyone, but we're gonna stir one another up to love and good works in that way. And I just think that's the piece that we just forget about, how critical the communal aspect is of that.
Yeah, it is. And you know, we've been saying it each week, but I think this one in particular shows why, like, the shaping and the formation that happens will only happen if you're in those environments, right? Because any one of us, you know, we'd like make the decision today, I'm going to grow in this area of my life. I'm going to grow in loving other people better, just to be general. You know, our will, our resolve to really not just become like be that person at the finish line, but to become that person and all that goes into that, it won't last, right? We're human beings, right? And typically we don't drift towards the good like that. We just don't. But when we're in a community with people and loving them and them loving us and all that goes with that, right? The imperfections are part of the process. God will shape us that way. And actually the whole process is joyful then. It's not like, just thinking about, I mean, the exercise analogies do fit this, but I think what's hard is that many people really don't like it ever, right? It's just it's a necessary evil to being healthy. But what we're saying is actually these environments over time, they won't be that. They'll actually be something that we really enjoy.
Does anybody, so that would be an interesting test. Does anyone actually stick with a fitness regime where they never actually end up enjoying, like, I feel like that's a pretty rare person, a
right?
Person that doesn't ever figure out. I mean, it's why, like, when people get in shape, it's typically because they found something that they enjoy.
It brings life.
So they not only love the fruit of it, but they enjoy it, whether it's, mm-hmm. you know, a sport, or, you know, they start swimming, they start running, they start lifting, they get into it. I don't know that I've ever met a person. Now, I'm sure because of our culture here, someone is going to say, like, well, that's me. I don't know if I've ever met a person that's, you'd have to be a really disciplined person to consistently do something that you just hate every time because you know it's good for you.
And you're seeing no measure, no growth, right? No measured improvement or
right or I don't know if you could,
because no pain no gain is a constant, right? We know that phrase, but it's not no pain no gain without any kind of enjoyment,
right? I think that'd be tough, but your point though is still well taken. That and I remember, you know, somebody talking about like, well, quiet time is like vegetables, like that's, you know, or and it's like, well, yes. But then you're assuming, like, what you're implying in that is it's not something you want, and it's not something you're ever going to like, but it's good for you. And that's not what the Christian life is. Now, what it can be is, or not what it can be, what it is more of a retraining of your palate.
Yes.
So where I would say is every time, like, think about the fitness thing. People hate it the first few weeks, but then most people who work out consistently, they also work out on vacation. Not because they're obsessed, but because they don't feel good. Like they want to, they're like, man, I've been around people where they're like, I gotta go for a run. I gotta do something because I can't, like, I just feel awful. Same thing happens when you start eating healthier, your palate and your body recalibrate to like, oh, this is normal. And then if you go a while without vegetables, I remember my wife saying that one time, she's like, I just need some vegetables. And I was like, I don't know that I've ever felt that way. Well, now I have, because over the years, with my wife's help, my palate has been retrained. And if I don't have vegetables for a couple of meals, I'm like, what in the world? I gotta have a salad. I gotta have something. I start craving that. So I do think if that happens with things like diet or exercise, how much more does that happen when we're supernaturally also being transformed by the Holy Spirit, that you get to a place where you're just like, I need to spend some time in the Word. I just need some time. Like, I'm a hyper extrovert. People know this about me typically, that like I when I say hyper, I don't mean just like really extroverted. Like, on all the personality tests, like, I'm extreme. Like, I'm labeled as that, as an extreme extrovert. But because of this formation in my life, like, I crave time away from everyone to be with the Lord, which is interesting because when we think about solitude, I think sometimes that's a misnomer. And so you think an extrovert doesn't like solitude. It's that I crave that connection with God. I don't actually withdraw. I'm not alone. And I'm very much aware of the fact that I'm not alone. I don't crave being alone in that. I crave connecting with God without any distractions, which is just an interesting spin based on my personality. I'm not saying it's wrong to say like I'm getting time alone. I know what people mean when they mean that. But it is interesting that ends up kind of being a misnomer of people wanting to be alone, because we're actually never alone, which that'll freak some people out to think about that. Like, you're never alone. And so it's actually like connecting though with God apart from other distractions and prioritizing that relationship. Point being, we're designed for community. We're not actually ever designed to be alone. God himself is never alone. Like, in the Trinity is never alone. And so it's really critical that we have that element and that we end up enjoying that together. So I kind of went back to the community piece, but it's also the retraining of the palate together, that we learn to desire things that we didn't think we would desire before. And so I think that's a big piece of this, by the way, and why I was asking, like, well, what do you want? Because if you do want that, you have to know, if you've been living your life totally disconnected from the reality that God is present with you, that you've never read the Bible before, you've never spent time in prayer, I tell people all the time, like, it's going to be really awkward at first. It's going to feel weird. It's going to feel strange. You're not going to understand things very well at first. And what happens so often is people either stop or they immediately go to easier things to digest, which can be okay, like, as, but it's not, you don't want to stay there.
You mean other writings or?
Yeah. So like, some people might, you know, just like, there's all kinds of like little devotional books, right? And so they just say like, well, that's how I get my time in the Word. And it's like, well, that's okay. Like, I'm not saying don't read little devotions, but it's also really important to kind of swim in the deep waters of Scripture and kind of let yourself feel a little overwhelmed, right? Same way with sermons. A lot of people will be like, well, I find some preachers that I like, and that's how I That's how I receive the word. Like, it's good to listen to other preachers, to read other books, to read devotions, but also to be in the word. And I think the same thing happens in our prayer life and everything else, that we, it starts to feel weird. And so we try to immediately make it not feel very weird, which would be like saying, I'm going to go start working out, and then immediately change every exercise and every situation to not feel any pain or fatigue. That would be a weird, that would not be a great workout.
No, it would not. It wouldn't even be working out.
No, it wouldn't be working out. Right. You wouldn't actually be growing if you changed every exercise, which is different than saying, okay, I'm going to choose a lighter weight while I learn how to do this, and I'm going to grow in that. That's different. And that is helpful and can be a really good thing to do.
Just the picture that I just had, Jay, when you said that, was like, you know, like a squat. So you have a barbell with weights and you squat, and saying, well, I think maybe I'll start just with air squats, which are great. You just do it with your body weight. And then someone else saying, actually, I think I'm just going to stand here.
Right. I'm going to stand here and watch somebody else do squats.
Yeah. And like in the end, looks... like, I prefer this.
Or I'm gonna, instead of doing like a deadlift, I'm just going to reach down and pick up this donut.
Yeah.
I've been getting a bigger donut every day. So like I can like lift it a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, feel the burn.
Feel the burn.
I would like to back up for a minute.
No, I think we should keep talking about donuts and put the donut on the floor.
Hungry, man.
Now I'm gonna put the donut on the floor, so I have to like do a squat to pick up the donut.
Flexibility. There
Flexibility.
You go.
There you go. See?
Look at me. That's so funny. I love it. So I was really enjoying that. This is a few minutes ago now, but it hasn't left my mind. The analogy of, you know, thinking about what you want. And you talked about ordering food at a restaurant. And it is interesting. You mentioned the dynamic of like we struggle sometimes to pick what we want when we actually have all these options to pick from and no one's compelling us. You know, we're not constrained in our desires at all in that moment. Could we talk about why that might be? Like, why do we have trouble, you know, either we like we fear like maybe this isn't the right decision. You know what I'm saying? Like, why do we struggle with that? I mean, the food one and ordering at a restaurant is pretty trivial, but it does. I think that's a good example because it gets at something within us that struggles sometimes. I think partly to discern our desires. So sometimes we don't know, what do I actually want? But then there's reasons I think we hesitate when we kind of think we know what we want. I don't know. Can we circle that for a minute?
Yes. Yes, we can. Immediately what popped into my head was, so we say to people a lot, and we have learned this in our own lives, that saying yes to one thing is saying no to something else. I don't know if there's a place where that is more evident than at a restaurant. It's very evident. And it's very much in your face that if I say yes to this thing, I'm actually saying no to all these other things. And most of our life, we can kind of get around that. We don't, when you buy something, we're not often fully aware of like, well, purchasing this means I won't be able to purchase something else. Or saying yes to this obligation means I'm going to say no to these other things. Which, by the way, in time is how we get into a lot of trouble, especially with just spiritual formation, because we tend to say yes to the things that are urgent or that demand a response from us. But I think a lot of it is because we don't realize it's saying no to something else. It's pretty, you know, like if someone asked you to, you know, do something at 9:30 on Sunday morning, then it's pretty clear, like, okay, saying yes to this means I'm not going to go to worship on Sunday morning. But we don't often think about that with like a commitment to a hobby or a sport or anything like that, where we say, well, if I'm giving every night in this, like to this, then that means I'm not going to be able to do this other thing. I'm not going to be able to invest in community. And I think in a restaurant, you get it. Like if I order the burger, I'm not getting the tacos. Which, by the way, you shouldn't be at a restaurant that serves both burgers and tacos anyway. But like, You know, like, does that make sense? So it just does. Like, I think that it's just very much in our face, that reality, which should be an understanding in the rest of our lives, understanding that if I say yes to working these overtime hours, I'm saying no to spending that time with my family. If I say yes to, you know, whatever it is, like this thing that somebody asked me to do, I'm saying no to something else. And then making those choices based around what do I actually want? What's most valuable in my life? What do I want? Where do I want to actually be spending my time?
Yeah, I mean, I agree too, by the way. I mean, it's just interesting to think about that, isn't it? Like either, and sometimes it could be like we're even concerned how another person is going to react to what we order or what they're going to order, and then comparing it. All the things come into play there. It makes me think too that we are often used to, and I think part this can be a perversion of what Jesus taught, right? Because he very clearly said that if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross. So that there's a very important element of being a disciple where we deny ourselves. But what he didn't mean there was like don't have any desires, right? It was again like, what are you oriented around? His kingdom and his ways and his heart, or your kingdom and your ways and your heart? And what he would say, and I think C.S. Lewis, I love how he talks about that the issue for us is that we really do settle for far too less than what we are offered. You know, we're like, I think he said something like we're offered infinite joy, right? Infinite joy, but we settle for far less. And I think that's part of it, is we're not used to the moment when we can just pick whatever we want, right? Our desires are often constrained by all kinds of things that are outside of our control. At the restaurant table, like typically it's like whatever you want, get it within reason, right? I think that's part of it. Like we just aren't used to that. What could it be if we really went for it and really got what we really wanted?
And trusted someone else to tell us what that looks like. So that's, I mean, I think about any movie where I think of different sports movies that I, you know, whether it's Hoosiers or Miracle or any of these ones, there are these moments where the athlete has to kind of give up the way that they think it should work in order for something better. And I think that's when Jesus says you have to deny yourself, and he talks about if you want to find your life, you have to lose it. Like you said, it's not giving up your desires any more than, like, you know, the athlete is saying that the coach is telling the athlete, like, you have to give up wanting to win or wanting to accomplish these goals. No, he's saying, if you really want that thing, then you need to give up your view of how that works. And that's what following Jesus is. And what you want, and that's where like the enemy can come in there and go like, yeah, well, what you want is, for example, like more money or a bigger house or whatever. But that's not actually, that isn't what you want. Like nobody just wants a bigger house to have a bigger house. It's what you think that house is going to give you, like that it's going to be a more restful place, or it's going to be a place where you can have friends over and enjoy time with them or with your family or whatever. So I think part of it is like digging down and saying, okay, but what is it? I think I want this thing, but what is it that I think this thing's going to deliver? And surrendering means saying, okay, Jesus, I trust you that if what I'm going after is peace, that your way is better. Like I trust that more than I trust my own ability to get it. So we can think about that with money, for example. Like you can find your peace in having a big retirement account, or you can find your peace in Christ. And do you believe that that's better? I think community is a huge one of that. People want relationships. They want community. And we also have very specific thoughts about what that looks like or how I'll get it. And over the years, I've just seen people struggle so much with surrendering that. And part of what Jesus is saying, that like deny yourself, is like you have to die to that. If what you really want is connection and you really want community, I've got it. I've got it for you. But you have to give up your own pursuit of what you think that looks like. And typically for us and as human beings, that looks like I want people who think like me, have all the same interests as me. They're in the same life stage as me. It's easy to talk and joke about whatever. And Jesus is saying, I have something much deeper for you, like real community. But like, do you trust me? You got to give that up. You can't. And it doesn't mean that there won't be any of those things, but it just means you have to give that up, and we don't like it. So it'd be like going into a restaurant and trusting somebody else and being like, man, like think about a restaurant. What do you really want? Like what you want when it comes to ordering the food, you want to enjoy it while you're eating it, and you want to, at the end of it, be glad that that's what you ordered. I mean, at the end of the day, like if you just simplify it. So imagine you go in and I used to have a mentor who would do this. He would take me to a restaurant, a little hole in the wall restaurant, typically like some ethnic, like some food that was not, you know, Midwest fare. And he wouldn't let me order. Like he would literally sit down and he would tell the server, make whatever you'd make for your family. Or just you bring us what you think. What are we going to? And my wife will do this sometimes. She'll ask, like, what would I be sad if I walked out of here and I hadn't tried? Like, if I found out later what this place is known for, whatever, like, what would I be sad? And sometimes we get weird answers and we're like, yeah, they're just telling me what the best seller is. And that's not what we're asking. And so those family-owned restaurants, you ask them and then they'll say, this is what we do really well. And so that mentor of mine, like I had to just trust him. And when he's trusting the other person to say, and I never was disappointed. I can honestly say that. I was never disappointed. Because if I go in there, I'm looking at the menu and I'm going to pick what's familiar to me, what I think might sound good. And the cook is back there going, you don't want to get that today. That's not what I would eat. I'd eat this. Well, then I want to eat what they're wanting to eat because they know what's best. Does that make sense?
Like, it does. And I love how it highlights, like for a disciple of Jesus, it's trust is always relational.
Right.
You know, and I think sometimes because of the way we use those words, like, do you believe in Jesus or do you trust in Jesus? We sometimes miss the meaning, the relational meaning, because oftentimes what that means for people is, do you believe that he did certain things? Do you believe he died on the cross? You know, and there's a much more relational way of thinking of that. And I love that, even that ordering food part. Do you believe me that I know what I'm talking about? Do you believe me that what I want for you is really, really good? Do you believe me that there might be another way of doing this and that my yoke actually is easy and light and you'll have joy, you know, endlessly? That to me gets at the heart of what it means to walk with Jesus and to do that with other people. It's believing him. I believe you, Jesus. I want what you want because I believe that you know the best way.
And that's what I was trying to point out too, of like, it's not that complicated. It's hard. The way of Jesus can be hard, but it's also easy. Like, it's simple. He says that his yoke is easy and his burden is light because all that it entails is just being faithful to him in the moment. Like that's what it is. It's not performance. It's not, like, for example, spending time in the word. What Jesus wants in that is your faithfulness of just surrendering to his word. It's not based on how well did you understand everything and how well did you like intellectually grasp a concept and then apply it to your life in some particular way. And at the end of the day, he's going to grade you based on how well you did all that. It's way simpler than that. And we struggle to figure that out. The reality is, yeah, if we believe him, then we'll pursue him in that way. We'll trust him. And again, when we do that together, this is where the church gets into trouble so much, is that we actually build our rhythms and our ministries around people who don't actually want it. Because we think real ministry is trying to convince somebody that they want something. And I didn't dive too much into that because I was trying to sense spirit and where people were. And I really was mindful of like, I don't want it to feel, I don't know if it was the right decision or not, but I did have a section in there that I eliminated that was like how churches get into trouble. And it's this, that we get into trouble because we try to convince people that they want something that they are telling us with their actions they don't want. Mm-hmm. I alluded to it a little bit of like, oh, if, you know, with the banquet, if we chase after them and we'd say, hey, how about next Tuesday? Is that work? Or next Saturday? Like, let's find a time. And after 30 years of ministry, I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do that anymore. And then you read the Gospels and you're like, yeah, Jesus didn't do that at all. And that's what it would take. So like, if we want to be a church that actually has a culture of pursuing Christ like that, then it means that, yeah, we're going to have to let, like, some people are going to not want to be a part of that. And I don't know who those people are. Like, that's the thing, is it's not like, oh, well, I know exactly who that, I don't know. I've been still decades into ministry. I'm always surprised by both sides. I'm surprised there are people that I would have thought would be all in that they're not. And then other people that I think are, that are just kind of on the fringe. And it seems like they're kind of in this consuming pattern, but the reality is they actually have never been asked to do more. And all of a sudden they're asked and they're like, yeah, I'm in. So I think that's a critical piece of helping people understand that it looks different. It looks different than the way the American church, and I always say the American church because they're, it's not that no other church, you know, no other part of the world struggles with these same things, but the church looks very different in a lot of other places where they wouldn't even, it wouldn't even occur to them to try to like gather in a big crowd because they'd be like, well, the crowds leave Jesus. Why would you want to gather in? Why would you try to build the biggest crowd you can? That seems like the opposite of what Jesus did. Instead, we want to pursue Christ fully and draw people with that, the people who are, you know, drawn to him in that way.
It's interesting. It gets at some of our assumptions of what the good life is and what it means to be fruitful, right? It does get at that. And I liked how, you know, this is going back to the very beginning of your sermon too, when you read Acts 2, and I read that one too, and I think you mentioned why it's so important. We were just going to keep reading it because it is such a beautiful picture. But I like how you put us there, like in their context, because it's sometimes hard. We do two things with passages like that. One, we imagine that they aren't real human beings, right? So like we maybe over-spiritualize their experience or something as if they wouldn't have had struggles or issues. So they did. They're normal humans. But then I think we imagine their context to be like ours, like with a big building that we all gather safely in and without the conflicts that they were experiencing that were profound cultural, you know, conflicts. Like you were mentioning, do I go to the synagogue and then do I worship the next day too for the Lord's Day? You know, all these things they were trying to work out in those moments. But I think that that's important for all of us because we have assumptions about what it looks like to be doing all of this well, this meaning church and church family life, right? And it's worth examining those things and asking, do I want it? Do I want it?
And can it be different? I mean, I'm sure it came across, but I also verbalized it of how you start to feel silly after 30 years of ministry. You start to feel silly reading Acts 2 out loud to anyone because you know where it's going to go. Like, why doesn't it look like that? Why? Well, what if we could? And then we try and then it doesn't, you know, but I've had glimpses and I think you have too, glimpses where it does feel like that. Like it's possible. But it's not possible through hedging bets or through trying to live in two different kingdoms. And I think we do that a lot in the church because of those other pressures, because like you said, like what does fruitfulness actually mean? And over decades of like, you know, brainstorming, doing ministry, consulting with ministries, talking with pastors who are wrestling with the same thing. One thing that becomes really clear is as long as is just this desire of wanting to have our cake and eat it too, which is the opposite of what Jesus, like that's so many times where Jesus is saying like, put, you know, he who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is not fit for the kingdom. unless you deny yourself. Like, you have to, like, there's this extreme, it is very clear multiple times in like across the ministry of Jesus that you're all in or you're not in at all. Like, is it? He chases the crowds away. The disciples are left and they say, where else are we going to go? You have the words. We believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, as pastors and ministry leaders, we struggle with that because we want both. We want the church to grow numerically and to grow in, you know, in fruitfulness, in real fruitfulness. Now, it doesn't mean that your church won't grow, but you have to abandon that. Like, that, I'm more and more convinced, like, you just have to abandon it and say, no, what we're going to pursue is radical faithfulness to Jesus and reorienting our lives around that. And whatever happens to numbers happens to numbers. I'm not, like, obviously I want people to know Jesus. That's not, it's not like not caring about that. But you got to abandon, like, those other markers. You just have to abandon, like, you know, numbers or finances or job security or anything like that. You just have to do it if you're going to experience, and everybody else has to too. Like, everybody has to kind of abandon that. And I've always wondered, like, how do you get to that place? How do you do that? And I do feel like we're in this kind of unique position right now where we kind of can. You're looking at that at the beginning with the church plants. Why we're trying to do the church plant the way that we're doing is because we want the Marinette church plant to have the freedom to just pursue Jesus and to not be left with, okay, but if we don't, like, we got to figure out a way to get more people involved. That cannot be the mentality ever. Because once it is, what we're doing is we're saying, okay, Jesus, I know what you got, and you're telling me to lay all this down, but I'm just going to pick this little thing up. Just this one little, it's not that big of a deal. And after all, it's pretty good because we want people to know you. That's why we want more people to come. And it's the golden calf. Like, it's literally just like, hey, we're just trying to help the people worship God better. So we're going to build this statue so that they have something to, mm-hmm. to actually be able to worship. And, like, we're helping, and, like, nope, not helping, actually hurting.
Yeah, and it's interesting how it can feel like, you know, the economics of all of it, whether it's a young, you know, beginning church plant, like, you need a certain level of money, for example, which means you need a certain number of people. Like, it's interesting how things that Jesus didn't concern himself with become our chief concerns. And then the things he was concerned about get sidelined because of those other things that come in place of them, you know? And that's why we so need each other, isn't it? Right? I mean, because we need reminders, we need encouragement, we need reassurance, like, that we're not, like, when we don't chase after the things of the world, the way the world does, that is actually a good thing. And it should be the mark of a disciple. Like, when you feel we've talked about this before, but when Paul says, like, if Christ hasn't been resurrected, then we are of all people who should be pitied, because we really have wasted our lives, because our lives are about him, right? Which means part of the process of following him is that you give up, because you want to give them up, things that everyone else thinks you really need to be okay. That's just part of it. And it's interesting how in ministry, whether it's pastoral leadership or just church, being part of a church community, we are going to be tempted continually towards those kinds of things that are really not his main priority. They're not things that God wrings his hands over ever. He's not worried about it. He doesn't lose sleep about any of it, but we do, right? And we get measured by it. Churches get measured by it. Pastors get measured by it. Leaders get measured by those things. And I think what you're saying is that we want those measurements to be the measurements of Jesus and the way he sees it.
Yeah. And you can't have it both ways. So I don't know that people know that, but, like, if I go to a conference, like, that's one of the number one questions somebody's going to ask is, how many people are in your church? That is the measurement of successful ministry in the United States. If you're a pastor how big your church is and what your role is at the church, that's the measure of success. And I don't think people, if you're not in that world, you don't realize like how burdensome. I committed myself a long time ago. I'm never asking that question. I ask about stories. Like tell me what's going on in your church. Like, tell me about like what's ministry fruit. Because I know what that's like to feel like you're being asked that all the time, that's the question that's coming. I mean, there are cultures like this where people just ask like, how much do you make? And that's the measurement of success. But the same thing can happen in the church, and you can't have it both ways. You can't pursue both things. I'm just more and more convinced of that. You cannot pursue both things. You can't, you cannot serve two masters. And I just feel like we're in a place right now where, you know, and people have talked about that of like, are we going to go to two services? Are we going to try to do something with the worship center? Because it's growing. There's still the sneaking suspicion in the back of my mind that the more successful this spiritual formation plan is, the less we're going to have to worry about space. Because I don't know why. I think in the long run, I think it will bear more fruit. I do. And I want more people to know Jesus. But I also know that in the short run, I remember when I was planting in Denver, and people would come to our church and they'd always ask about different programs. And they would be like, oh, do you have this ministry or do you have this ministry? And the pressure I felt to give that kind of, like to give them an answer that would make them want to stick around, it was huge. Because every person that would come and visit our church and then leave was a rejection of, like, it felt like a personal rejection. It felt like I was an indictment on the ministry we were doing. And think about how silly that is. Because think about how many people walked away from Jesus. Like, how we ever got that in our head, that someone walking away, like, you know, because I remember with children's ministry, we didn't have children's ministry in our church. Like, we were just too small. We just didn't have that. And I finally, and we didn't have a youth ministry. We didn't have a youth group. And I remember turning the corner on that and feeling like, no, it's okay to just say that. And so I used to tell people if they show up with teenagers and they'd say, well, do you have a youth ministry? I would say, we don't. We do have other teenagers, and we have a lot of spiritual aunts, uncles, and grandparents who would love to invest in your teenager. And we think that's better. And if they don't think it's better, then they're going to find somewhere else. And to get to a place that I was okay with them going and that I believed, no, this actually is better. And then we had people who actually did stick because they also saw it and saw that was better and they wanted that. That's what it takes, but not only in the church-wide thing, but also just in your personal life. So I think that to like bring that down to like ground level for people, because most people who are listening to this are not in vocational ministry. So that feels like that was kind of an aside for like, you know, a couple of my seminary students who listen to the podcast, that was for them. But what does that mean? Like for just people trying to follow Jesus, it does mean this kind of reorientation and a rethinking of what does it actually mean to experience, like you mentioned, like what is the good life? What does it look like to actually pursue Christ? What do I need to do that? And what are those obstacles for me that I think, what do I think I need that I don't actually need? And what am I avoiding that I do actually need? Like I might think I need all these classes or these programs or whatever. We're going to have these classes or whatever, but like even with the kids, and I think, you know, already, like some people are like, oh, we don't have enough for the kids. Like we got plenty. Mm-hmm. It's plenty. What do you not need that you think you need that you need to just give up? And what do you actually need that you've been avoiding because either your palate's not trained for it yet, or you're scared, or you don't understand how it works? Like, what are those things? And then like, let us help you figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to just double down on that. Like, the help you figure it out part is a conversation, you know, and we, Jay and I and the other staff, we want to talk, especially around questions related to how would this work for me? How could this work? You know, in that spirit, we want to help. We want to help figure it out. And again, we're not intending at all to like, our goal is that everyone who wants to follow Jesus here will follow him. That's our goal. And that's the whole point of this pathway that we've been laying out, is how do we do that together? And how do we help people, especially those who may be newer to our church, right? Figure out how do we do that together as a family? Because that's really essential. I wrote down, Jay, just kind of a parting quote from what you said on Sunday. You said, something more than a place to attend. Do you want that? Do you want something more than a place to attend? And I just love that question, because that's my answer to that is yes. Oh, yes. I definitely want something more than that. And I think I'm thankful to be in a church body and in a family where that is the case, where people want more than a place to attend.
And that's what that was the tone I wanted to leave people with, was the excitement of, if you're sitting there and you're listening and you're like, I've wanted to be a part of a church family that just reorients themselves completely around trying to pursue Christ and then be spread out like leaven, then this is it. And like, even the efficiency of what we're trying to do, like, we're not going to fill people's schedules up with a bunch of stuff, but like, the stuff that we're going to do is going to, like, it matters. And it's the stuff that Jesus is calling us into. That was one of the reasons I wanted to point out that these environments that we looked at, like, these don't come out of thin air. They're not like creations by Jeff or Jay. This is what we see all throughout Scripture. Like, you see people being formed in their worship through their worship of God together with God's people. You see people formed through being in community with one another. You see people being formed through learning about God and like doctrines and studying God's word. And you see people formed in the everyday testing of their faith, the everyday stuff that goes on where God says, okay, I'm going to teach you. Now I'm going to actually really teach you how to love others, because you're going to have to deal with this difficult person today. Or you're going to see how to love others, because this person is going to love you when you're difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to notice that, and you're going to see it, and then you're going to go, oh, that's how God loves me. That is just what we see over and over again. And we've been trying to figure out a way to like, to help facilitate that in a simple way for our church, so that we're free to really live the lives that God has called us to live. And by the way, I'll just end with this. I mentioned that we want to talk to people and get creative. I continue to have questions from people whose lives don't look like the norm. And I just can't stress enough, like, that's okay. Like, let's talk about it. It certainly, but it could mean radical reorientation for you, or it could mean that we figure out how to help you do that. I mentioned youth sports. I feel like youth sports get picked on all the time. I didn't mention on Sunday, but I'll mention it here. People know, like, I've been very involved in youth sports. So the reason why I bring that example up is because it's a personal experience for me, not because I look at that and go, oh, well, that's the problem in our society. And and that's tempting, because if you are not a person or a family that's involved in youth sports, it's very easy to look at that and go like, well, look at all the time that's given to that. And look, I can point to a lot of things that take a lot of our time and money and energy and all that. So, but the question is, what does it look like to radically follow Jesus in the midst of that? Because sometimes what we do with anything, whether it's a hobby or sport or an activity or some other pursuit, we just say, oh, well, that means I can't really participate in the life of the church. Like, okay, well then, like that, I would say that I would push on that and say, what do you want? That is the parable of the banquet, you know, like, so that would concern me. But the question of, okay, well, what does that look like? You know, what does it look like if I'm at a tournament on the weekend? Or what does it look like, you know, to make choices about where we're going to make intentional choices that are not dictated by the world. But to let Christ actually form our schedules and our lives to around experiencing him and his life. So I hope this series has been helpful. We can't stress enough, like, ask questions. Let's talk about anything that didn't make sense or that you're wrestling through. And then just be watching for more communication as we ramp this up heading into the fall. I'm excited for the experiment. I'm excited to see what happens, what God does with it. And hopefully we will continue to pursue the life that Christ has given us and is offering us day to day. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. We hope that it's been helpful. And until next time, grace and peace.